Well, this is Dennis Emery, and I'm here with another installment of the Legends of Kentucky Tennis, the Hall of Fame edition, and today's guest is Rick Schaferman. Rick, thanks for joining us.
It's my pleasure, Dennis. Thanks.
Well, why don't we start at the very beginning? How did you get started in tennis and where?
Well, I lived in Vienna, West Virginia, and I was 11 or 12, got wind of something about tennis and went to a meeting, and they had some drills, you know, introducing us to.
How old were you at tennis. That point?
Well, 11 or 12. And I was new to Vienna, so I was trying to find, of course, in the area I was in, there was lots of kids, baby boomers. Uh-huh. But I didn't really know anybody, and I'm not sure how I got there. Maybe my parents said, hey, you know, go this, and I rode my bike. People that started it started the Mid-Ohio Valley Tennis Association and the Warners, and they were big in the area. They had a couple of kids, and they were playing tennis. Their son, Dan, I knew him from there, and then when I was in college, why he came and visited, and this was Miami University. At any rate, he came and stayed with us for a year. He didn't he didn't like it. At any rate, they had a ladder, and I was near the bottom of the ladder because they didn't, you know, I didn't deserve to be anywhere else. I didn't know what the heck I was doing.
Right.
Played enough challenge matches that I won my first trophy through that by moving up the most rungs on the ladder. And I guess I was hooked from there.
Yeah. So did you begin playing tournaments over there, or you wait till you got to Owensboro?
I didn't play any tournaments that, you know, they had drills and stuff like that, trying to keep us interested. And there weren't any quote unquote pros, so far as I know, or they weren't qualified as that. But they had a guy that came up to talk to, you know, a group, and he was a teaching professional in Huntington or Charleston, and they had me hit with him once. And he said, well, you've got potential. If you stick with it, you know, you might really enjoy playing tennis. And so I did. You know, now when I moved to Owensboro, I was a sophomore in high school, went to Owensboro Senior. And went out for the tennis team and played at Moreland Park. Have you ever been to Moreland Park?
Yes.
What a great facility that was back in its day. Somebody told me, I haven't been there in quite some time. They made some pickleball courts. I don't know.
Of course they did.
And there weren't any teaching pros there, but there were a lot of, we'll call them, older men. They're, you know, I was, like I said, 12, 13, and a lot of good people there that would hit with you. Some of them were retired, and some of them would, you know, they'd play doubles, you know, they needed a fourth. And then there were, you know, Maury Schaefer was working at the park. Maybe he was in college. That was his summer job. And he was a tennis player. He played at Kentucky Wesleyan, I think. At any rate, hit some with him, and then we had doubles matches just amongst ourselves. One of the people there, Ed Rouse, he I smile every time I think about Mr. Rouse. I think he worked nights.
Uh-huh.
So he was there in the afternoon, and he would always was looking for somebody to hit with and explain, you know, the finer points, help us with not just me, but other people, kids. And it was a great place to go. It was someplace I could ride my bike to and met other kids and improve my game.
Do you think that's where your love of doubles came from?
Yeah, maybe. Because we did play doubles with the men. And, you know, I learned a lot there. I heard, listened to a few of the your podcasts, and I listened to Jack Diddy's.
Right.
And he was talking about as a kid going, and there were a lot of similarities.
Uh-huh.
To, I didn't have Jack's intensity.
Right.
But I remember playing in a JC's tournament in Owensboro and didn't qualify to go to the state tournament, which was in Newport, I think. I got to go because Maury Schaefer and drove, and he took us up there. And we may have only been there, drive up there in the morning and come back in the evening. But I do remember seeing Jack play Tommy Wade in the final, must have been the 18s.
Right.
And they were both really intense.
Uh-huh.
I think Tommy Wade punched his tennis racket, you know, bruised his, bloodied his knuckles on the strings. Why do I remember that? I don't know.
but you do.
I do.
You know, and what's interesting to me is how many times the JCs and their relationship to tennis, how many times that comes up in these podcasts, you know, from people our age, and you never hear of any JC involvement, you know, in tennis. I haven't heard of any JC involvement for 40 years, 30 years.
Are the JCs still active?
I don't know.
You know, I don't know either.
But, you know, Jack went to, for example, he went to Utah
uh-huh.
to play the national JCs championship.
Right.
Yeah. So anyway, it's just interesting how involved they were at that time. What would you say were the highlights of your junior career and your high school career?
Well, the highlight of my high school career is I won the third region championship twice. I was playing my junior year. I played number two. Jerry Rouse played number one. He was a year older. And he and I met in the final. And I beat him. The next year, and we, you know, we played teams from Henderson and the three schools or the two other schools in Owensboro, and then would travel to Evansville and play several of the schools over there. So my game was improving, such as it was. I mean, we were playing with wood rackets, serve and volley. We didn't have many rallies.
Right.
My senior year, I got to the final and played Chet Allgood. Do you know Chet?
Yes. A former Kentucky player.
Right.
By the way. Great backhand.
He was from Henderson. But he was young. Well, this would have been 68. I don't know how old he was then. Don't remember. But I did win that match in the final against him. So I had two. So that got me to go to the state tournament, where the first round I played Brad Lovell.
And the state tournament, you know, now and for years has been in Lexington, but at that point in time it was in Louisville and it was held on clay, if I'm not mistaken.
You are correct. Yeah. I'd never been on clay.
Uh-huh. Welcome.
not that that would have made any difference. Lovell and I could have played on hard courts, and it is still, I don't remember any scores, but I do know it wasn't a hard match for him.
Brad Lovell's another guy who ended up playing at the University of Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
As I remembered, he had a big kick serve. You know, he did not play for me, but yeah. So on clay, that would have been effective.
Yeah, and having never seen it,
I mean, a kick serve or clay.
That's
yeah.
right. That was my junior year, and then my senior year, we played at Seneca, which I don't think was clay then.
Uh-huh.
It may have been hard courts. Didn't matter. I played a guy from Bowling Green, and I can't remember his name. I can't remember a lot of stuff.
Uh-huh.
But Joe was his name, his first name. And we played, it was 3-2 or 3-3, something like that. But he won, and I went home. Go ahead.
Were you playing junior tournaments at that time? For example, like the qualifier for Southerns and those events, would that be something that you played, or were you into the Wesselman Park and Moreland Park circuit?
I don't. If I played one or two tournaments, I would have played Moreland Park and the city tournament in Owensboro, and played against adults.
Uh-huh.
They had some tournaments for kids, and but I didn't develop any real skills really until I got to college, in my opinion. I don't even remember going to Wesselman Park until I was an adult. Now, that said, the men played a team from Evansville, a team from Murray. I don't think Bowling Green, but Mr. Rouse, did I mention him earlier?
Yes.
He had friends in Nashville, and so we generally play home and home. And I got to play some people, adults, from Nashville and Evansville, and you know, there wasn't anybody to encourage, you know, playing any of these junior tournaments around. And maybe I'd have gone, maybe I didn't. I don't know, but I was.
So you get now, you graduate,
mm-hmm.
and you decide you're going to go to Miami of Ohio. Did they recruit you for tennis?
No.
Okay.
They didn't start recruiting, so far as I know, until the next year. My first freshman year was the last year that freshmen couldn't play.
In order to pursue your academic studies.
Well, whatever that rule was, you know. Lou Alcindor had to sit out a year,
right,
too.
Right.
And maybe Bill Walton.
Yes.
In basketball. So freshmen couldn't play. And so the tennis coach there, he might have been my age today. I'm 74. He was old. And I don't know that he seemed like he couldn't run if he, you know.
Right.
But I don't do any running either, but that's another story. At any rate, he did hold a tournament for freshmen coming in just to see who was there and what they could do. And I was lucky enough to win that tournament. There was three or four matches that we had to play. So the next year.
That put you in line, gave you a leg up.
Well, it gave me a leg up.
Yeah.
I did not play with any of the team. You know, he didn't say, well, come on and play with us.
Right.
You know, we'll be, you know, practice or do anything. I don't know what the rules were.
Right.
But certainly didn't play any matches. I don't remember even hitting any more balls after that tournament was over. The next year, my sophomore year, Steve Strome became the head coach. Are you familiar with Steve?
Yes, very much. Yeah, he coached at LSU.
LSU and Duke. U.S. Military Academy. He was up there at West Point.
Right.
But that was his first year. It was my sophomore year. And he came from a basketball background. He was inducted into the Miami Hall of Fame as a basketball player, maybe as a coach too, because I think he earned, that honor. At any rate, he started recruiting, and we had one real good player. Funny, I just thought about this. That had played the previous year, Bob Griffith. He was from Newport or whatever, a left-hander. But they didn't get along.
Steve Strome, very much a disciplinarian type coach, yes. As I remember it.
Yes, exactly. So he built a team and recruited a couple of players, Kenny Daniel from the Washington area, D.C. area, and
Craig Wittes was in there somewhere.
Yes, but that was after I was gone.
I got you. He was a great player, by the way.
He was, yeah. At any rate, he recruited two good freshmen who came in my senior year. Of course, that first year, he just ran us. He drilled us. Now, running for me wasn't an issue. My senior year in high school, I ran cross country. And for the first time ever, a couple of caveats there, but Owensboro Senior won the state championship in cross country.
Wow.
Because we ran as a team. Now, the previous years, they had the winner of the entire race. But never as a team, and it was a team sport. At any rate, I enjoyed running, and it didn't bother me. Everybody else kind of whined about it, but we were in better shape.
Yeah,
we ran a lot of wind sprints and did some distance stuff, but and learned how to get along. And then the recruiting. So in my senior year, Dave Brown was the other guy he recruited. Uh-huh. Kenny Daniels played one. Dave Brown played two. And they, at any rate, we won enough points in Toledo to win the MAC championship for the first time. In several years, maybe back in the 50s.
Yes.
So this was 1972. And I think I read, just to look at, I think he won, Coach Strome, won 9 MAC championships in his tenure there. Didn't win any of the first two, but after that.
9 straight.
I think.
Yeah.
And then he went on to LSU.
So Ball State would have been in the MAC. And Bill Richards at some point comes in there, and he won a bunch of MAC championships after Steve Strome.
Yeah.
The reason I know that is Bill Richards recruited me at Ball State.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and retired last year. So put that career in perspective. Uh-huh. So what did you learn from Steve Strome? Because you obviously got better and,
Well, the discipline to want to work at it, I would say. I didn't want to let him down. When we started recruiting, he started recruiting. I didn't do any. Good players, and it you know, it made a difference, and he encouraged us to do whatever we needed to do. So I don't have any proof of this, but my theory is...
You're among friends. Go ahead.
He told us it was the second night, and one of the guys lived in Toledo. So he said, here's the keys to the car. You all go out and relax, but you have to be back by such and such time. And so we were at maybe a minute ahead of time. At any rate, because of the way it's situated, well, I roomed with Steve, Coach Strome, everybody else, and you know, of course, I was the only senior.
Uh-huh.
So he sits me down and he says, essentially, I've run this, you know, whoever's playing this and who's playing this and who's going to win. And he says, it comes down to your match.
And you were playing three.
I was playing three. He says, because he figured Kenny would win his match and Dave might win his, or vice versa. And the 4, 5, and 6, you know, and then we had doubles too. He says, but it comes down to your singles match. Now, I've never questioned him about it. I've often thought about it, but never have. I think he told everybody that. That would just be his manner.
Yeah.
But I did win the number three singles. It was 4-4 in the 9-point tiebreaker in the third set. And the guy hit from Toledo, you know, hit a down the line shot and it hit the net and fell backwards. And so by that, we had enough points to win. So.
And then you also won the doubles, I think.
I think so.
The number two doubles.
Uh huh. Yeah. Kenny and Dave, they were awesome and they won, you know. I think that was the same year. We also went to Northern Kentucky. I got to play one of the Gullickson twins.
Northern Illinois.
Illinois, I'm sorry. Yes. I did not win, but I came close. That was one of my good losses.
So you would say winning the tournament, winning the number three singles, winning the number two doubles, that would have been the highlight of your college career.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, it was, of course, yeah.
And it doesn't finish any better than that.
No.
Unless you, now you would be qualified to go to the NCAA and you would do that. But back then, it wasn't like that.
Well.
Yes.
You know, I think I had the chance to do that. It came after... I graduated. It was the week after I graduated. So if I graduated on Saturday, it started the next week.
Uh-huh.
As it was, though, I had another important thing to do. I got married the next Saturday.
Oh, there you go.
He knew that. And I don't think anybody went that year.
Uh-huh.
You know, just... I don't know whether Steve was disappointed. If he was, he didn't say anything about it.
Right.
But you know, we had planned, you know, since, well, we got engaged Christmas of the previous year, and so and set that date. Strange as it may seem, that was my wife's birthday too.
Ah.
So that's kind of. Has been kind of handy for me not to forget.
Well, so now you're graduating.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What was your degree in, and why did you go to Miami of Ohio to pursue that degree?
Well, there were only two schools that had a paper technology degree. I majored in, you know, chemistry, science, but it was a area of paper technology. They had a paper technology school. I had done a science fair project, actually two, in high school. My brother and I did the first one, where we made paper. It essentially showed how it worked. My father was sold paper, printing paper, industrial papers, things like that. And he got one of the paper mills, Hammer Mill Paper Mill in Erie, Pennsylvania, to send us this packet of stuff. And we built we had a piece of Fourdinaire wire. That's the wire that runs on the machine. And we made paper by hand. And we did two science fair projects, one in Owensboro, and then we went to Evansville and had that one. I didn't win anything except the opportunity to go and visit the National Science Fair, which was in St. Louis that year. And so I was thought, well, I'll do this, and that would be papermaking, and it'd be fun. So I got my degree in papermaking, paper technology back then. And did not go into the manufacturing.
Uh-huh.
I went into sales.
Gotcha.
And did that at a wholesale level because they were moving my father to Louisville to take over some management there, and that left the Owensboro territory open. And it was one of those, oh, well, you got the same name and these people will know you and whatever and this and that. He developed that territory when we moved there in 64. So that's why I went to Miami, and I loved it.
Yeah.
As it happens, probably more information than you need. But my daughter went there, and then my oldest granddaughter went there.
Oh,
so,
boy.
So we have, and actually my son-in-law was there too. That's where my daughter and son-in-law met. So now my granddaughter's sister, she said, no way am I going there. She went to Ohio State.
No way. So after college, you're getting this, you're working, you're getting this job, and you continue to play tennis.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Tell me about that. How did you get going? Was there somebody that you played with a lot, or?
Well, there was always somebody. Bill Trunnell would be first on the list. Maury Schaefer, I already mentioned. Ben Hawes, they were 3 or 4 years older than me.
Right.
And they were still playing. Moreland Park was still the hub because that was the only tennis court. Well, I guess the country club, Owensboro Country Club, had a few courts. And I spent the summer after college at the country club teaching some kids.
Uh-huh.
Not really playing for that much. Bob Smith, he was several years older. Ed Rouse, I already mentioned. And we played those people from Evansville, from Murray, because there was a connection there, J.O. Waters and his Murray connection. I met Henry Boffman during one of those things, and the people in Nashville. So Sunday afternoons were an opportunity. If we didn't have something scheduled, well, we'd meet there and play those people. And evenings, of course, the city parks ran the tournament. So in August, late July maybe, they'd have the draws up for the 12s, 14s, 16 and 18s, and then the men's and the women's and the doubles and whatever. So there was a lot of activity. You didn't do it over a weekend, though.
Uh-huh.
You scheduled your matches so you could play in the evenings and this and that,
right,
and the other. It was a big, pretty big deal. So I was playing with Bill, Maury Schaefer, Ben Hawes. We'd play singles, we'd play doubles. And somebody said, hey, you know, they're having a tournament in Bowling Green, you know, or so I started playing some of those and getting out, you know, and meeting people. Bill Trunnell and I guess that was in the 80s, we won a couple of doubles tournaments, and we're ranked number one in the state. And what was that, 82 and 83. But you had to, you know, but that was fun. I mean, you'd go to Louisville, you'd go to Lexington, playing the indoor. So it just started as a, and you know, we'd play singles and doubles. And, you know, it was fun. And my wife let me do it.
Well, you end up, you get ranked number one in the state over the years,
mm-hmm.
nine times.
Mm-hmm.
In the 30s, the 35s, the 40s, the 45s. And then somehow in 2000, you circle back and you play with a guy named Mark Turner and you win the 30s again.
35s, I thought. Okay. Maybe it was. I don't know.
Yep. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah. So, you know, the way I always remembered you was as a doubles player. But you're talking much more like, you know, you liked singles and you.
I did. And I was invited. I did well enough to get invited. And maybe some people were invited, but couldn't go or whatever, to the Southern Senior Cup. And would play singles and doubles in that. And got to play some really good players. The one I remember most was in Columbus, Georgia. And I don't know what day it started, but I left work and drove to Atlanta and then on to Columbus the next morning. I had a 10 o'clock match.
All right.
And I miscalculated the time. I think I rolled in there about 10 minutes till 10. But I had my stuff on, and I was ready to play. And I checked in, and they called my name, and they said, you know, I maybe checked the draw but didn't know the guy's name. His name was Armstead Neely.
Oh, my gosh. Who was number one in the country at one point. Yeah.
He played at Wimbledon
and
the U.S. Open and whatever. And, of course, it was on clay because they had, 11 clay courts down there. But I walked out on the court and won the first set. Strangely enough, I played pretty well. But I hadn't been practicing enough or was in enough condition.
Three sets in the summer.
Right. I mean, I have been playing, but, you know, but this was a guy that was ranked in the world.
Yes.
And I lost the next two sets because I was tanked. I didn't tank. I was out of gas.
Yeah.
At any rate, I was in the locker room cleaning up, and the Alabama coach, if you will, whoever was running their team, he walks into the locker room there and he said, "Who are you?" I took that as he was surprised that I did so
well. The best compliment he could have given me. Yeah.
I told him nobody. But I did. We did play a lot of doubles. I had good doubles partners, and we were successful, you know, a lot of times and got ranked, won some tournaments, and Terry Thomas and I played a lot. I think Terry and I played you
Kyle,
thank you. At the boat club, wasn't it?
Right.
At any rate, I lost my train of thought now. We had a lot of fun playing doubles.
Well, you played a lot with Terry Thomas.
I did.
Yeah. I mean, good athlete, Terry, good athlete.
He was a college basketball player.
Right.
And very good athlete. He's a pretty good golfer. He told me the other day he missed shooting his age, which is what he's trying to aim for, by a stroke.
Wow. Wow. He's, I think, 77 now.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. A little bit older than you.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the Armstead-Neely match, probably the highlight, I would say, for you, you know, taking a set off the guy. Was there any of these times that you were ranked number one in the state three times in singles, mm-hmm. three different age categories, but nine times in doubles.
Mm-hmm.
Any of those stand out to you as something that, you know, was a little different or a little more special?
They all meant a lot. I don't know that playing with Chuck Sackey.
Yes. Who's a great player, had played at Duke and number one at Duke, and I think won the ACC.
And he was a longtime pro at the boat club.
Right.
Once in a while, Chuck would call me and say, "Would you come out and hit with me?" He says, "I want to hit against your serve." That was probably my, you tell me. I served and volleyed, and he wanted to work on somebody that would do that.
Yeah, had a good enough serve that would press him, and he could come forward and
But I look at my list here, and Mark Turner and I think we played Jamie Howell and Garnet Scott in the final. Now, Jamie played at UK.
Yes. And another great backhand. and Garnet had a big serve, as I remember.
And so I think we went three sets and eked it out. So we just enjoyed playing. And the fact that we were, won enough tournaments, we didn't win all of them, those years. But we maybe got beat in the final and whatever. I don't remember all of those. But playing with Chuck Sackey, Bill Trunnell and I started playing the age groups in the early 80s because Bill was 5'8", 5'10". And I was always thin. So in college, I was like 6'2" and 110. I got married and I went all the way to, I grew a couple more inches. So I was 6'4" and 140. So they called us the stick and the stump. but we had fun playing those tournaments, and it was, sometimes the wives would come. We didn't have kids at that time, and it was as much social. Now, we wanted to win.
Right.
And playing in the boat club tournament, there was always good players in that. And then they had the one in the fall, which was for the age groups or older groups, the Bobby Pyatt tournament.
Right.
And so we got to play our enough tennis that in my case, in Terry's case, in Bill's case, we all stayed married.
There you go. Well, you know, like many of the Hall of Fame people in the state, mm-hmm. many of the Hall of Famers, what you notice is they have two or three things that they go into the Hall of Fame for. Certainly, your number one rankings in the state, you know, representing the state in senior competitions. But administratively, you know, you've done a lot. And
thank you.
I know you ran the Kentucky State Open from 1986 to 1996.
Mm-hmm.
And Jack Diddy's name keeps coming up, but he gave up that tournament and it moved to Owensboro, and you were the tournament referee for 10 years. And
right.
You and Terry Thomas basically ran it for
right.
all those years.
Right. With a lot of help from a lot of other people, because we had Moreland Park had 12 courts at that time, but we sent them over to Kentucky Wesleyan and other places to play. So we had, you know, we had a lot of help, but Terry organized who was going to be there and what, you know, he said, I'll do that if you'll spend the time and get the referee certification.
Yeah. So you did.
I did. Yeah. Every year.
Somewhere in there, you know, you're running that tournament, you're playing tournaments, you're doing, but somewhere in there, you become president of the USTA Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a story behind that?
Well, Kathy Mudd, she was a player. She came to Owensboro and saw how we ran the tournament. Of course, by that time, I was living in Louisville. That's why Terry had to do all the
right.
the groundwork. We moved in 96 to Louisville. I think that's right. At any rate, Kathy was on the board. She may have been president. And she recommended me to come in and serve. And I was a player representative or something like that. And then
right.
and then was a director. And then they decided... asked me if I would be president, and I did. It was a year term.
2002 to 2003, I think.
Okay, yeah. And I thought about this. What is the, assuming you would ask, what was my greatest contribution to the Kentucky,
my next question.
To the Kentucky Tennis yeah. Association. And that would be bringing in Sandy Wilson to the USTA Kentucky and him becoming the president. He is way smarter than, you know, a lot of people. Uh-huh. I don't know whether you know Sandy or not.
I don't.
Well, you know, I marvel every time I talk to him. I called him last year, I think, and asked him if he would consider coming on to the Razor Racquet Board.
Uh-huh.
And he's retired now, but he's on the board of a foundation. I didn't think about what board he's on. At any rate, he's very involved in that, and he is really smart and is helping that. And he said, I just don't have the bandwidth to make that happen. But thanks for asking. But he, you know, maybe we'll get him at some time. And by the same token, he and John Herring spent a lot of time when, I guess, John was the treasurer and Sandy was the president.
Right.
Developing the investment strategy for the USTA Kentucky investments that, you know, they would get money from Southern and wouldn't spend it all, and they, you know, want to have it for a rainy day, and so they got it invested, and it's done well. And we've used that same strategy. And I talked to Sandy about it here recently with the Razor Racquet Board.
So at some point, you go out of being the president.
Right.
Okay. And you go over to becoming president of Razor Racquet.
Well.
It splits.
It splits. And there was a 3 or 4 or 5 years, I don't know what it was. The USTA decided... the board decided that it would be a better idea for the Razor Racquet, the fundraising the 501c3 portion of it, and maybe this is, you know, they're following Southern's lead,
right?
To have that as a separate entity, because it really wasn't getting the attention probably that it needed, if that makes any sense,
right?
Or it needed more attention and having a separate board to do that, and so my memory is that they asked several people to meet, and I can't remember who the president was at that time, but she said, you know, I'm going off, I'll go on to the Raise a Racket board. And we had a meeting, and, you know, we all said, yes, that'd be good. And, well, who wants to be this and who wants to be that? And the last one was she was going to be president, uh-huh. And was, and who wants to be vice president? And I figured she was going to stay on there a long time. And I said, well, I'll be vice president. And she resigned, I don't know, maybe 12 months later, because of something that was happening in her life, and she couldn't focus on Raise a Racket. So I, by default, became the new president. And we have grown from there. We have done a lot.
Well, I was going to say, the first year, I think you all raised $9,500.
Yeah.
I think. And now, last year, it was over $95,000. Are my numbers right?
I had 92.
92, okay. So close.
Yeah.
Do you feel like that's been sort of your administrative legacy is growing this Raise a Racket Foundation?
Well, I never thought about it as being my legacy because everybody worked hard on that.
Right.
We didn't have any structure, and now we have some, a lot, and we know where we're needing to go, and by the same token, we want to give money away to juniors so they can go, you know, so they can get instruction, so maybe they can get rackets. We sponsor or help with several community tennis associations around the state. And, you know, one thing that one of our board members took on last year, and he got a grant from Southern to develop a coaching clinics so they could get certified tennis coaches.
Right.
And that's Victor Alera started that, and he's having clinics and whatever for coaches to encourage, and most of it's in Eastern Kentucky. So it's just starting now, but there's just a lot of opportunities. We've helped with benches, you know, for tennis courts at a high school in Western Kentucky. And when we had the flood and the boat club was inundated,
right,
we were able to help some of the teaching pros who couldn't teach because the clay courts were out and their indoor courts were out.
Yeah, I remember that.
Now, it wasn't, you know, we don't have big money, but it was helpful to them. We helped Chickasaw Park redo their courts, and the Tyler Park courts we helped with, you know, so we were able to get things here in Louisville and around the state. And it's very gratifying, and we get great letters from the kids and the presidents of the community tennis associations that we've helped. Do we need to help more? Yeah. And we just had a meeting last week where I saw you. that the help that the Southern Tennis Association is going to be able to send our way. So that won't be money we raised, but I feel good about the fact that if we had $9,000 in 2010, we've multiplied that by, to $90,000.
Whatever that number is, yeah. I attended the Challenger that day. Mike Eden gave a talk on raising money for Razor Racket. And one of the things that they showed was a young player, Evan Fombe, who's from Lexington. Mm-hmm. And he talked, they had a video.
Right.
And he talked about how he was able to go to the Southern Close, where he went to the quarters, and he was able to go to the National Clay Courts, where he won three or four matches. And, I remember thinking then, what a great thing to be able to give to the people of the state, but particularly in the facilities, because, the parks departments, they aren't always the greatest at keeping the courts up. And the problem is the courts get run down, yeah, and then there's no money to keep them up. So,
well, once or twice a day, I drive by the courts at Ballard High School, where my kids went to school, and they're terrible. Uh-huh. And they'd had, they'd been resurfaced, and I don't know that they've been mistreated, but they have not been treated. Uh-huh. And it's awful. I couldn't go and play there.
Right.
So there's only so much money, Ashland. And we try to.
Right.
What is that from that movie? It might have been The Music Man. Money is like manure. Doesn't do any good unless you spread it around.
Well, I see around the state, the impact that mm-hmm. Razor Racket's had. And Rick, thank you for coming in today. Is there, you've just impacted the state in so many different ways, and you have to feel great about that. A player, as an administrator, a past president of the, and now president of the Razor Racket Foundation.
Well, I'm the past president now. Mike Eden is the president.
And that was a month ago or something?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but I'm sure you're going to remain active with Razor Racket. But thank you for coming in today. Is there anything that you wanted to say before we...
I have left out Billy Reed.
Yes.
And Doug DeMoss. We played doubles. I played doubles with each of them. Bill Trunnell and, of course, Terry Thomas. The Kathy Ramsey I mentioned. Terry Thomas and I got to the finals of the boat club one year. It may have been the Pyatt. I was at the boat club. And we played Jackie Cooper and Charlie Ellis in the final.
Two pretty legendary guys. Jackie Cooper may be, the best player the state's ever produced.
Right.
I mean, I know we've produced a lot of good ones. Mel Purcell, I guess, would now be the, better than Jackie. But at that time, Jackie would have been the best.
Yeah. And, it was Jackie and Mickey, wasn't it? Mickey
yes.
Shedd.
Yes.
And Mel, and, but at
they're
any rate,
in the discussion.
Yeah. it got to be, we lost the first set 6-0, and we were down 5-0, and I was serving. And I did win my serve, and we lost the next game. So it was 0-1. Yeah. That was.
But that's those two pretty good guys. Charlie Ellis ended up, he was an All-American at the University of Georgia.
Right.
NCAA quarterfinalist, and I think semifinals of the doubles, but quarterfinalist in the singles.
So I've got to play with and against some really good people, good tennis players, but as far as I know, good people too. There's nothing like going to a tennis tournament and playing and just having a good time. Win or lose. Now, I always like winning. I lost my share too.
Henry Boffman's old doubles partner was Herb Kays.
I know, yeah.
And Herb was very close to me and was kind of the guy who really got our program clicking financially. Mm-hmm. You know, he did a lot for us. But he would tell me, now, Dennis, you got to come down to the Pyatt. You know, you've got to come down there and you need to watch, you know, what's going on. You need to play. And I said, Herb, I'm not playing, you know, I'm coaching. Yeah, but he would tell me what a great thing it was, how much fun he and Henry had playing these tournaments. And they won a lot, and they were super competitive, but they just had a lot of fun playing. So I know what you're talking about him.
He was a great guy too.
Yes,
you know, he and Henry came to Owensboro and played, I think, every year.
Right.
So many thanks to many people. You know, and thank you for. I've enjoyed this a lot.
Good. Thank you, Rick.